Go ahead and turn to Genesis chapter 39, verse number 19. You know the story so far. Joseph had been sold into Egyptian slavery, and he was bought by Potiphar, who seems to be the head of food services for the Pharaoh of Egypt. He is literally the chief butcher. And Joseph is put to work as a probably bottom-tier servant in the residence of Potiphar. And the blessings of God upon his family line result in him just doing so very well that it is not horribly long before he's worked his way up through all of the levels of service until he becomes kind of the major domo of Potiphar's residence, of all of his household and his extensive holdings around the household. He is trusted with everything. But he's also caught the eye of Mrs. Potiphar. And Mrs. Potiphar begins making advances on him, making passes, even expresses, you know, "I want you to sleep with me." But Joseph says no. It wouldn't be right. It would be a sin against God. It would be a sin against the man who trusts me and who is your husband. And so the whole thing climaxes with apparently Mrs. Potiphar emptying the household of witnesses and making one final advance, a physical advance on Joseph. And Joseph is so quick to try to escape her clutches that he leaves behind his little kilt, which is the only thing other than probably a loincloth that he would have been wearing traditionally in the household. And so Mrs. Potiphar, I believe, seized control of the narrative at this point out of fear that Joseph would tell his story first to Potiphar and be able to get her in trouble. And so she grabs the servants back into the household and spins a tale of attempted rape. And she folds a little bit of anti-Semitism into the middle of it, because Egyptians are from the Ham line, and Semites are from the Shem line. And so they have ethnic variations between them. And so at this particular time in history, by the way, there were a lot of Semites coming into Egypt from up in Canaan. And there was some serious growing prejudice against these Semites. And so she spins a tale of attempted rape by a dirty Semite. This Semite that was brought in here and shouldn't have been here. And so she tells the story to the servants first. I'm thinking a lot of the servants didn't believe her because, come on, a lot of us have been in situations where we know that there's something going on. And when it finally comes out, we're like, yeah, I knew there was something going on. I think that's exactly what these people knew. And so the big thing, though, is how is Mr. Potiphar going to react? Verse number 19. As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. So he gets mad. He either believes his wife in total, or possibly he reacts because of her accusation and the need to respond. But either way, Joseph's in trouble. So verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison. The word here that we have translated prison has to do with a pit. So it is a pit in the ground that has kind of some sort of structure over the top of it. And this is a place where these people are kept until they are needed to do probably very menial, hard labor. So they're not just simply sitting down there, and they're not being housed. They are a labor force. And so he is put into this pit, into this prison, this work prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. So Potiphar's going to have him placed in the royal centralized penalty farm, the pit. And so he was there in that specific prison. And his life has changed dramatically again. He's back at the bottom tier. And this time, the jobs are much more menial, probably much more tedious, probably much more disgusting. But he goes ahead and tries to do what he does with the best of his ability, which is one of the things we have to love about Joseph. Joseph demonstrates this idea of whatever your hands find to do, do it all for the Lord. So Joseph works hard, and God blesses him again. Verse 21, but he who is was with Joseph and showed him chesed, steadfast love. This idea of God likes him, loves him, and wants what's best for him. So God showed him that and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So the keeper of the prison is basically the guy that gives work assignments. And so Joseph starts getting more and more responsibility, a little bit higher up the chain, better jobs, until finally, verse 22, the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because he who is with him, whatever he did, he who is made it succeed. And so over a period of time, we don't know how long, we know that it terminates in the next part of the story when he's about 28 years of age. So it could have been a few years that this goes on. But eventually, Joseph is kind of the top trustee in this work prison. The actual warden, if you will, the guy who gives the job schedules to the prisoners, he's handed all of that off to Joseph because Joseph does such a good job with it. And so that is what feeds into the next part of the story, chapter number 40. Which takes place in 1897, going into 96 BC. As I already said, Joseph is now 28 years old. He's been in Egypt 11 years. 11 years as a slave. Part of it was in a nice household. This latter part was working in the local work farm, if you will. Chapter 40. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. So here we have two other members of the palace food services. The cupbearer is the guy that makes sure that all the vintage gets put up in the palace for use of the king and of his guests. The baker is clearly the guy that takes care of all the bread that comes to the Pharaoh and comes to his guests. Very important aspects of food services, right along with the chief butcher, who is probably the one that provides all the meat that goes into all those meals. But these two guys get themselves in trouble. The suspicion of, I think, the Jewish people was, tradition, was that there was a plot against the Pharaoh. And these two guys were accused of being participants in this plot. And so verse 2, the Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, that is, the chief butcher, in the prison where Joseph was confined. So there is apparently some sort of hierarchy here amongst the food service workers. The guy who takes care of the meat is the one who's in charge of food services. So he's also kind of in charge of the prison where staff members of food services get shoved when they're in trouble. So that's where Joseph happens to be, and that's where these two heads of food services get stuck. Verse 4, the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and they continued for some time in custody. So they are there, not just simply cooling their heels, they're not just sitting around, they are having to work. And Joseph is the one that is giving them their assignments and making sure that they get their rations for the day so that they have the energy to go and do their work schedule. So we don't know how long that goes on, other than the fact that we know that the next part seems to come pretty quickly, and we know it's in Joseph's 28th year. One night, verse 5 says, they both dreamed. The cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. Now when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he meets them in the morning, probably coming to give them their work assignments for the day, and he notices that they're in trouble. They got a problem. It's obvious. And so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, why are your faces so downcast today? And they said to him, we have had dreams. Now, as soon as that comes out of their mouth, and this is all being spoken in Egyptian, Joseph probably didn't speak Egyptian when he first arrived, but he had to learn it. And so now he's speaking Egyptian to them. And we had dreams. As soon as they say that, he's like, wow, okay, my ears are perking up because I've had dreams. Sometimes they're prophetic. And we've had dreams. There's no one to interpret them. Meaning, normally, these guys, if they had such a dream, would go and find some professional interpreter of dreams. Somebody that claimed that they could reach into the spirit world and find out such information. Well, they can't do that because they're in prison. They're in this work farm. And so Joseph said to them, well, do not interpretations belong to God? So interpretations are not from people. They're from God. And you know what? I got an in with God. Please tell them to me. And so verse number 9, the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. Now, nowadays, many of us have heard this story so many times, we think it's obvious what this dream means. But you need to remember as you're reading this that these guys don't understand what these dreams mean. That's why they're asking. They couldn't unravel it for themselves. There's too many possible ways that it could be interpreted. So Joseph is going to give them a very precise and specific interpretation. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said, "In my dream, there was a vine before me. And on the vine, there were three branches." Now, he knows that's significant. Why are there three branches? "And as soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth and the clusters ripened into grapes." So it's a real fast motion of production of grapes from bud to blossom to clusters ripened. Verse 11, "Pharaoh's cup was in my hand." So the cup that he was very familiar with. "And I took the grapes and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup." Now, that's not what you normally do. I mean, normally to make wine, you go through this process of, you know, treading them and putting them into containers and giving them some time to ferment and stuff like that. But for the purpose of this dream, all he needed to know was, I had Pharaoh's cup in my hand, and I grabbed a hold of some of these really lovely looking clusters of grapes, and I squeezed it into that cup, and then I placed that cup into Pharaoh's hand. And then I woke up. And so now he's waiting for the interpretation. Joseph said, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. Now, could it have been 3 weeks instead? Well, sure. Could it have been 3 months? Yeah, that's another possible interpretation. 3 years? Yeah, all of those you could have gone with. But you see, Joseph has been told by God's Spirit. It's not any of those, it's 3 days. Specifically. That's a very precise detail time-wise. So in 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head. That's good language there that will be repeated in the other interpretation. And restore you to your office. And you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. So he gives him a good interpretation because that's exactly what it is. Then he makes this request. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house, for I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. So he's like, I'm a kidnap victim, number one, and I was also falsely accused and convicted, number two. So if you can please show this kindness and thanks to me once you're in personal contact with Pharaoh again, let him know about my case so that he can take care of it. Now, verse 16. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he kind of gets his hopes up that, you know, this guy will tell me good things for myself. He said to Joseph, I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head. Now this is not sweet cakes. This is, you know, bread cakes. And in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. Now, I want to stop right here. Like, it doesn't really take a supernatural understanding to go, that does not sound like a good idea. Does not sound like a good dream, dude. It sounds very negative when you got birds eating up the food that belongs to Pharaoh. But I guess he's holding out hope that maybe Joseph will give him a good dream. But Joseph can't, because Joseph is functioning as God's agent in giving a proper answer. So Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Now, it could have been 3 months, 3 years. But those would have been wrong. So he's not guessing here. God has given him the precise answer. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head, exact same phrase as the last one, except this part, from you. And then he's going to hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. So the ancient practice for execution was once the person was dead, their body was displayed long-term as a reminder to anybody thinking about participating in the same crime. And in this case, apparently he would be beheaded, and then his body would be hung up, and the birds would be allowed to basically predate it, to scavenge it, until it was no more. Now, the tradition is that apparently this guy was guilty. He had been involved in some sort of treasonous behavior, and this was an appropriate fate for his betrayal of the trust of Pharaoh in him. So verse 20, on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, just so happened that that was the case, and I think, I can't remember this for sure, but it's possible that the plot was supposed to take place on this day with his death. But instead, this is what happens. He made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted. So the mark of a prophet is, and you see this in Deuteronomy chapter 13, is that a true prophet, his prophecies come true with 100% accuracy. And so Joseph has the markings of a true prophet. He is 100% accurate. But it doesn't do him any good if the chief cupbearer forgets. Verse 23, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, it was probably not out of viciousness or spite or hatred. I think it may have simply been that the chief cupbearer was looking for the right time to say something to Pharaoh, and in his estimation, that time never came. And eventually, he just forgot about it. He just gave up on it. It wouldn't do any good to bring it up now because it's too late. Because he will be very apologetic along those lines in our next story, chapter 41. After 2 whole years, so that means Joseph is 30, Pharaoh dreamed a dream. Now, we'll come back and we'll talk about that dream in our next session, but I want to backtrack a little bit to an event that happens before this dream. I think this happened in the middle year, between the dreams interpreted for the two officials and the dream of Pharaoh. And for this one, we go to Genesis chapter 35, and it's kind of a sad part of our story. Genesis 35, 28. If I have my timing correct, if the chronology matches, which I think there's good reason to believe this, this event happened in 1896, going into 95 BC. Now the days of Yitzhak were 180 years. That's a good long time. That's 5 years longer than his father Abraham lived. And Yitzhak breathed his last, and he died, and he was gathered to his people, old and full of days. The gathered to his people seems to have that double meaning of all of his family gathers around him in this world to say their goodbyes, but he is gathered to all his people in the spirit world that are of the same faith and same righteousness as himself. And it's a reunion time there in the spirit world. And so he goes to see his mother and father and grandparents and all of those that preceded him. Now, in the physical world, note this. His sons Esau and Jacob buried him. So Esau and Jacob, the twins, come back together, and they place their revered father into the tomb at Machpelah, at Hebron. These two gentlemen are 120 years old. Now, that sounds really old by our standards, but they are probably to be equated into their 70s and 80s by our way of thinking when this event occurs. But that means that there is more grief that has now come into Jacob's life. He has lost his beloved wife. He has lost his beloved son. And now he has lost his beloved father. And so he is grieving here in just the year before his grandson, his son becomes a leader in Egypt. And that will be the next part of the story that we will tell when we get back into God's inspired and written word.